going
to
start.
You ready to start?
Good evening and welcome to the Environment and Natural Resources Subcommittee on Forestry. It's Wednesday, February 21st, 2007. I'm going to call for an approval of the minutes of our last meeting, which was last Wednesday, 2:15. Anybody care to make that motion? Senator Ingebrigtsen moved. Any discussion? All in favor?
All right.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We have a full slate of bills today, and I'm the sponsor or the author of all of them, and I'm going to ask Senator Dibble to take the gavel.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first bill that I'd like us to consider is Senate File 420.
All right, Senate File 420, Firewood Pest Control Regulation, to the bill, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move to take Senate File 420 off the table.
All right. Senator Saxhog moves to take Senate File 420 off the table. Does that require a vote?
Yes.
All right. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Right. Senator Saxhog moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 420. Does everyone have the amendment in front of them? All right. Why don't we go ahead and would you like to explain the amendment, well, and then we'll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to revisit the firewood ban that we went over last. It was Wednesday, I think.
All right.
And with me tonight's Bob Meyer of the Minnesota DNR, and he's going to go over the amendment and help answer any questions. We also have a handout which deals with the Wisconsin rule, which is something we thought would be a good thing to consider when we're reviewing this.
Looks like this. All right. All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The amendment you have before you, the SCS 0420A-1, is some language we have worked out with the author to help deal with some of the questions that committee members had last week when you heard this bill. You'll see Section 1 of the bill remains the same as the bill as it was introduced. Section 2 of the bill provides clarification on how this process will actually work. You'll see A, after the commissioner issues an order under paragraph B, the ban of firewood non-approved on state lands goes into effect. It's something we're working on, and we will have for your review before final passage on the floor, so you can understand what we will have. Once the bill is passed and signed into law, we will publish that order immediately after, bringing the whole bill into compliance. What we're looking at prohibiting is all firewood unless the firewood has been obtained from a firewood distribution facility located on land administered by the commissioner. Two, was obtained by a firewood dealer who is selling firewood that is approved by the commissioner under paragraph B, or has been approved by the Commissioner of Natural Resources under paragraph B. And paragraph B is that written order that I just spoke of. The commissioner shall, by written order published in the state register, approve firewood for possession on lands administered by the commissioner. And then the next sentence exempts that from rulemaking and a provision in rulemaking that's in Chapter 14.
Mr. Meyer, that's to speed up the process a little bit.
Mr. Chair, members, correct. The bill that you have before you is a very important bill. We need to pass it as soon as possible. The consequences of delaying this activity and not getting it done before camping season starts could be detrimental to our ash trees within the state. We're at risk of losing all of our ash trees should the emerald ash borer take control or become infestated. So that's why we're we appreciate your activities on this, and the passage of this is just crucial. So Section C on 1.26 is a violation that we've worked out. The violation under this section is subject to confiscation of wood, and after May 1st, 2008, a petty misdemeanor penalty. This is to deal with some of the concerns I believe members had. We do still feel it needs to be as severe as possible. If this was left at a misdemeanor, the fine would still be set by a fine schedule through a panel of judges with our input. But I do understand your concerns about having it be a misdemeanor, so that is going to be up to you. But a petty misdemeanor is what we have in the law right now. Section D is a definition that Senate staff came up with for the purposes of this section. Firewood means any wood that is intended for use that is exempt from the permit requirement in Section 88.16, Subdivision 2. Upon looking at this, working with Mr. Knopf, the definition of campfire would work as well. So this is something we will be working on between now and full committee as to what the definition should be of firewood, so people are very clear what we have or what we're talking about in the state parks. What we're looking at are people bringing in any wood that's intended for recreational or for cooking purposes while you're camping. This is one method, and as I mentioned, we will be looking at that definition before the bill comes to the full policy committee.
Mr. Mayor, what is a permit? What permit is described in 88.16, Subdivision 2, Paragraph
3? Mr. Chair, members, Mr. Knopf has the statute, I believe, in front of him there. It's the requirements for our burning permit that is in law right now.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman and members, maybe I'll just explain a little bit. Right now, this refers to Mr. Myers, we were talking earlier. Paragraph B is only a campfire, so right now it's limited to a campfire. So it's when it's for the purpose of a campfire. We could also put in the term campfire as it's defined in 88, but it could also be broadened because there are some other exemptions in subdivision 2. For other things, such as a fire started when the ground is snow-covered, a fire contained in a charcoal grill, or a fire to burn dried vegetative materials are also exempt from the open burning the open burning restrictions, these are exemptions from the requirement that you get a permit to burn.
Okay.
And so right now it is limited to campfire, but the question is whether or not the committee wants to expand it beyond that or not. This is just something I put together this afternoon. I'm trying to think about this, but there are some other options.
Mr. Chair, members, I would like to at this point in time leave this language in the bill with the understanding that we'll be reviewing the definition of firewood, that it may change between now and the policy committee based upon what the needs are for the complete control of these of the wood on state administered land.
Sounds Senator Saxhog, is that acceptable?
Yeah, that sure would be.
All right,
Mr.
Great.
Chair.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, the date of the next section is the effective date, and I think the committee understands how this bill will become effective. It is linked to our publishing of the commissioner's order, and we are working on that, and we will get that information to members as soon as possible.
Great. And Mr. Meyer, Senator Saxhog had provided the Wisconsin rules as an example. Is your intent to take a look at some of these rules and maybe take advantage of some of the work they've already done, some of the thinking
Mr.
that they've
Chair,
already
Mr. Chair, members,
undertaken?
Yes, thank you. We will be looking at what other states have done. We do need to be a little bit more restrictive at first. Mm-hmm. We're working in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture for their control regulation of all wood coming into the state. So we need to do this right away, control the use on our forests. Ag will be amending their rules and procedures as well. What we're trying to do is get the best handle we can on it before the camping season starts this year. What were approved firewood and things like that, we'll be working with ag. So next year it'll be the same as what ag has. Mm-hmm. But we need to act swiftly and get control right now before the camping season starts.
I think the committee agrees. Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I did want to point out one difference between this and the original bill. And further looking at this and looking at the Wisconsin thing where it has a phone number to call up to find out what is, there wasn't a process in the original bill. It mentioned would approve by the Commissioner of Agriculture, but it didn't have it. There wasn't a process laid out for the commissioner to notify what would that be. And so I removed it for now because you have a process. I mean, the department can work with the Commissioner of Agriculture and put that in the order, but there wasn't an order. So this is all tied to a specific written order published in the State Register. But before, also, it said that if it's been approved by the Commissioner of Natural Resources or the Commissioner of Agriculture, but there wasn't a process for that. And so I didn't think that it made sense to be in there. But, that's something. I just wanted to point that out, that that's not in this draft. And it was in the original bill. And, in fact, if you look at the Wisconsin one, if you look at page 4, the last page where they actually have the regulation, it's very, very concise. But it says that it has to be approved by the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. Is allowable. And note, a list of firewood sources approved can be obtained by contacting and gives a name of the contact person. I'm not sure that something like that is appropriate in law at this point.
Mr. Knopf, where in the original bill?
In the original bill, it was been approved by the Commissioner of Natural Resources under paragraph B or the Commissioner of Agriculture. If you look on 1.21 of the amendment, it would have been somewhere.
I mean, I'm looking at the original bill. What language did we leave out from the original bill?
It's 1.17 has been approved by the Commissioner of Natural Resources or the Commissioner of Agriculture. And there wasn't a process for the Commissioner of Agriculture to let people know what's approved, so
right.
I wasn't sure.
Okay. Well, keeping that in there probably is important for people to know beyond just the State Register. And I tend not to go read the State Register on a daily basis. Maybe other people do.
Mr. So, Chair, we will be engaging in, and we are ramping up for a statewide complete education campaign. Mm-hmm. So people will be aware of that. It's been in the papers, but we're continuing to educate. We're exploring ways to best do that through our publications, okay, through our electronic communications, through our reservation system. And we will be working hand-in-hand with the Department of Agriculture to make sure that we're on the same page and we are approving and certifying the same wood. So without having to force the bill to go to the Ag Committee with the deadlines we're facing right now, I would hope members understand that and realize we will be working closely with the Department of Agriculture, right, making sure we're in complete cooperation.
Right. All right. And if Senator Saxog feels strongly that there needs to be some language in there, we'll leave that to Senator Saxog for the next committee. And just backing up to the violation, section 1.26 and 1.27, just to remind committee members and let Senator Sharon know, there was an absence of any language specifying a violation, yet there was a prohibition established in the first draft of the bill in the absence of a violation specified. When a prohibition is enacted, it defaults to a full misdemeanor. And there was no language about confiscation that I recall. Maybe there was, but I don't think there was. And so the committee felt strongly that we should maybe be more specific about what the penalty is and also talk about the confiscation piece. Senator Saxog, petty misdemeanor, that's
Mr. Chair, I think right now that'll be fine. If we find that something more stringent needs to be there again, mm-hmm, I think the DNR will let us know.
I think also I'm recalling Senator Chaudhry, who was visiting the committee and was engaged in this conversation, had some questions, some thoughts, and so maybe we just bookmark this for the future about liability, personal liability that folks might be taking on if it's proven that their pile of wood brought in the nasty bugs that caused some infestation in some area, similar to the kinds of liability that people take on when their campfire is the one that caused the forest fire. So that's something for the department to think about maybe in the near future. Any other questions from the committee? Anything further, Senator Sharon?
I'm just curious to know, because I'm looking at the penalty, and the language is that it's on the lands, because that's firewood on land. Is it likely that if a person enters this land, they are going through a gate or someplace where somebody is looking at a permit mm-hmm. on the window or something like that.
Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, members, yes, and thank you for bringing that question up. What we're, the way we envision this system to work now, a person upon receiving an approved firewood source will receive some kind of documentation, a piece of paper perhaps saying approved firewood, you know, with the number of bundles that you have there. So when you come into the park, you would hand that to, we'll ask, do you have any firewood? They'll say, yes, it's from an approved source, you know, Farmer Joe or whoever we're, that we've approved in the local area. They'll have that, and we'll know that it's there. They will need to have, and that'll be in our order that we'll publish how, you know, documentation and things of that nature. We don't want to be having to search people's cars, and, you know, we won't be checkpointing people. We will be asking them. They'll voluntarily tell us what they have, and they'll have the documentation through our approval process to present to us to verify that.
Senator Sherman.
Thank you, Chairman. If they come drive up, got a permit, do you have firewood, or are you planning to burn anything? Yes, I am. Do you have a permitted firewood? Blank. I don't know what you're talking about. It's in the back of the trunk. Is that at that point? Can they get take it away, or are you gonna create a penalty right at that point?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sherman. No, we would say here's the situation. Take the moment to educate them on why we're doing it, what's going on. Take the wood and offer them the ability to obtain other sources of wood, either at the park or where they can get approved firewood in the local area.
And one more question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The permitting process occurs annually, is it, I think, for the state parks permit? So that's a time, I would think, that especially for a while, that there's a really deliberate effort to say this is a new regulatory process about camping and being quite deliberate about raising people's consciousness to this as a recommendation.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sherman, thank you so much, because that is an opportunity. We will use that as an opportunity also. When they call in to do our reservation system, we're hoping that that will be our first point of contact to let them know what's there. Any formal information we send them or email them or however we confirm that reservation, we will include a message in there. We look at numerous points of contact with this, with the information that they need to know about bringing firewood into state parks and the uses and what the situation is.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, anything further? Senator Saxog?
Mr. Chair, this issue, as Commissioner Meyer said, we really need to move this bill quickly, and so it'll be in position for the camping season. So I move that Senate File 420 is amended, be recommended to pass and sent to Environmental and Natural Resources Policy.
Okay. First, we'll take the vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes. Okay, so Senator Saxog moves Senate File 420 as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the full committee on Environment and Natural Resources. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next,
okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, we have Senate File 260. And this is a bill that will give some timber relief in part of northern Minnesota. I have the A1 amendment. I would like to move this amendment. Is language that the other body adopted in committee on Monday.
All right. Senator Saxog moves the A1 amendment, and this is an author's amendment. First hearing, Committee of Origin. All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With me today is Scott Dane of the Associated Contract Loggers and Truckers. And he's going to go over the amendment and answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you.
That's great. Just.
Does everyone have a copy of the A1 amendment?
Okay.
No.
As soon as
you
grab
your
mic.
Thank you. That's good.
All right.
Any copies, Rich?
Yeah.
I brought some extra.
Okay.
I don't, actually.
Senator Saxog, you have the A1 at your table?
I can get a copy of my briefcase, if I may.
There it is.
We've got it. Thank you.
All right, are we ready? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Dane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Scott Dane. I am the executive director for the Associated Contract Loggers and Truckers of Minnesota. I'm here on behalf of 125 logging, trucking, and associate companies to explain this amendment, answer questions, and also share additional information regarding the crisis that the timber industry is being plagued with right now that's threatening the very future of it in Minnesota.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. At first, I'd like to say that I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I've been up in northern Minnesota dealing with this situation for about 6 to 8 months right now, and things are very desperate in northern Minnesota regarding the timber industry and the mill industry as well. Recently, the value of timber has, in essence, collapsed compared to where it was a year ago. High of $80 a cord 1 year ago to an average of about $25 a cord right now. Now, the timber industry is kind of unique, and if you haven't been involved in it, it's kind of hard to understand, but loggers and mills buy timber years in advance. They have to have a portfolio of timber available in front of them to allow them to plan and purchase equipment and cash flow their business. So wood that was bought 2 years ago, as an example, for $60, $70, $80 a cord and could be marketed at that time under the current economic, under the previous economic conditions, can no longer be sold. So the price of wood coming down is actually a good thing. It allows our mills to be more competitive, and that's what we're working towards with the governor's task force, which I'm a member of the governor's task force that was looking at this. However, it creates a unique situation, and what do we do with all that high-value state timber that cannot be profitably harvested? And so that's a cloud hanging over the industry right now. The current state policy allows loggers to default on those permits, and if they were to do so, they would forfeit their down payment, and then the state would re-auction that timber. However, because of the terms of the state contracts being five-year terms, loggers could very well sit on this timber for an additional 3-4 years after it was purchased. There's no incentive for them to take that forfeiture of their down payment this time. So that, in essence, removes a large volume of wood off the market. So we need to provide an incentive to allow these loggers to return this wood, which will not be marketable in the future as well, and get that reintroduced back into the market, sold at current market value, so that it can be harvested and supplied to the area mills that we have in Minnesota. That's why we're asking for this incentive here to avoid penalizing the permit holders any more than they've already suffered over the last 12 months. Loggers at this point have extended their lines of credit, have exhausted their savings, have had 2 months of work, and that's going to come to an end in about 2 or 3 weeks. This industry is at a crossroads right now, and whether they survive and support the forest products industry of Minnesota is going to be determined in the next 12 months in Minnesota. I was recently out to Colorado. They contacted the Associated Contract Loggers and Truckers of Minnesota, asked us to come out there because Colorado had an infestation problem similar to what you're concerned about with the firewood situation here of lodgepole pine beetle, which is killing tens of thousands of acres of lodgepole pine out there. They said, well, we need to have the loggers harvest this. And they turned around in Colorado and realized they ran the loggers out of Colorado 20 years ago. and they had no loggers left. And so their timber, their forests have been unmanaged for 20 years, and the result is diseased and fire-prone forests. We don't want to see that happen in Minnesota. But they realized that once that infrastructure was gone in Colorado, they couldn't get it back. And because we have the infrastructure in Minnesota right now, they're interested in us coming down there and looking at their situation. So we're at crossroads right now. Everybody's looking at the state of Minnesota, what they're going to do. And I would hope that the state of Minnesota would seriously look at what role they can play in assisting the loggers in getting through this crisis period to ensure that we have the logging infrastructure we need upon the recovery of the industry. So I'd like to thank you for the time to talk to you. I did pass out some information that you can read at your leisure, a little bit more detailed regarding the situation here. But it's similar to the farming industry. The loggers have not had state assistance pretty much in the history of the logging industry in Minnesota. But we need it now. If we're going to be able to survive, we need that. So our goals and objectives with the state are to protect the infrastructure we have, minimize the additional financial hardship that would result from the forfeiture of down payments, and to reintroduce the wood that is necessary at a market level, market value, that will support the area mills and hopefully contribute to them getting open back up again in Grand Rapids and Cook and Bemidji. And that's not the the only mill. Those aren't the only mills that are suffering. The entire industry is suffering. So thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxon.
I'm sure one of you is going to ask this, but I was just going to ask Mr. Dean to talk a little bit about what the actual value of the deposits are right now, that and then if they were refunded or whatever, what we'd be talking about in actual costs here.
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chairman, committee members. Loggers secure the timber with a 15% of appraised value, which equates to about 5% of bid up value. The state of Minnesota has $100 million under contract right now with Minnesota loggers. So the down payment, 5% of that $100 million is $5 million. That's the number you're looking at right there. Now, in order to make this bill or this policy or legislation revenue neutral, we recommended that the down payments be handled as a credit brought forward for loggers for a couple of reasons. First, it would not require any DNR transfer of funds directly to the loggers. And second of all, we wanted to have that as an incentive for loggers to remain in the industry. So if they've got a credit on the books for a two-year period, hopefully that would entice them to buy more state timber, because we are not seeing an expansion of loggers in the industry in Minnesota at all. We are seeing a contraction. So as a rough number, $5 million is what you're talking about as down payments.
But as you say, it's using the credit method, there would be no refund, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Saxon, or
Senator Sharon. What would the credit do?
Right now, committee member, Senator, Chairman. Right now, if a logger defaults on a timber sale, he loses down payment, the state retains it, he has nothing, and he walks away from the sale. If it's a credit, he doesn't lose that money, and he can apply that towards future sales. So he doesn't lose the money. That's all it does. The credit would allow him to not forfeit the money.
Great. So we're clear, would either counsel or Senator Saxog or whomever just walk us quickly through the bill and help us understand it? I see there's some distinctions between, or was that in the previous? The trust lands? Was that in the previous? Okay, I'm kidding. I'm trying to read this stuff really fast. Why don't you just run us through it really fast so we understand.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dean will walk us through the
bill.
Great,
thanks.
Okay, Mr. Chair, committee members, the first thing on line 1.13 would be timber sales that were purchased after July 1st, 2004, but before July 1st, 2007. I've got a graph here which we can provide to you. I'm sure you can just see the high peak right here, though. That's the period where the rapid escalation of timber value and then the collapse of it. That's why that period has been identified.
So if I'm understanding the premise of this bill, I apologize if I'm asking like a really obvious question, the whole purpose of the bill. We've got a bunch of folks locked into contracts to pay a lot of money for timber that's not as expensive today as it was when those contracts were initially executed. Is that am I getting it?
Okay, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
All right.
Sir.
Can I ask a clarification?
Senator Sharon.
Who's the contract with?
The contract, Senator, Mr. Chair. The contract is between the Minnesota DNR and individual loggers for the most part. Mills as well and brokers too are in there. But 150 loggers have permits with the state of Minnesota. And then, of course, the 12 roughly mills as well.
150 loggers and 12 mills. Okay. Senator Sharon.
And just because I wonder whether or not you could manipulate the market in a way that would create a faulty escalation and then create a credit system. How can you assure me or can you explain to me what were the market forces or are they manipulatable that you can create a system like this that you purchase in it and escalate it and then you get a credit when it's really not a real market situation?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Senator, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry if I don't follow the process necessarily properly. I'm trying to. This is interesting, and it's a very complex problem that resulted here. But people said, you know, people were speculating perhaps and just saying, you know what, timber value is going up. I'll just keep bidding it up till it goes, you know, it'll never go down. But the reality of the situation was the timber prices in Minnesota were driven by the OSB mills and their product they were providing. They weren't driving the escalation. It was the housing boom in the United States that was driving the escalation and the demand for the product that was in Minnesota. And then the banks were contributing to that with all their creative financing during this housing boom and everything else and allowing people to get into bigger homes and stuff. So that's what really influenced the escalation of the price of timber. So the OSB plants, Ainsworth, Trust, Joyce, Warehouse, and those could sell their product. As an example, OSB a year ago was selling in the stores for $28 a sheet. Now it's down to about $5 or $6 a sheet. So we're just feeling the ramifications of the collapse of the housing market in the United States.
Sure.
So the Minnesota loggers were just bidding on what the end product could afford to pay for the wood. So that was what was driving the escalation prices, if I answered that clearly, I hope.
Senator Sharon, OSB is oriented strand board. It's what many of these mills are making, and it's excellent building material. You know, for flooring, it's akin to plywood, or you know what we're talking about.
Senator Fredrickson,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxhog, would this be available to a contractor who has already harvested part of the stumpage?
Mr. Dane.
The way I understand this, I'm no. That question. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Senator Fredrickson, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fredericks, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I get kind of excited about this issue and just jump ahead. No, this would, as far as I understand, would not include sales that are currently open, as they call them, and have been partially harvested.
Okay. Did the previous Mr. Dane? Did the previous bill permit that? I thought I remember.
The previous.
It doesn't matter. I thought I read that in there. So, Senator Fredrickson, follow up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was, and Senator Saxhog, I was wondering if I should say that in this section, that that it would not be available to an individual who has harvested some of the timber off of the land.
Senator Saxhog, or
Well,
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, I'm certainly open to anything in terms of if it improves the bill, so, or the efficiency of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxall, I don't know if that's a possibility or not. I don't know if somebody could harvest half the wood and then say that they now want to take advantage of this provision.
I'm not sure.
Mr. Knopf.
I'll be able to address that a little better.
Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tomlinson, serious.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Tomlinson.
For the record, Bob Tomlinson with the DNR Division of Forestry. Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, once a permit is, and I'm trying to remember the exact reference number, and I'm thinking it's 91.114, but I'm not positive of that, but basically, once a permit's been begun to be operated on, it has to be finished completely. As a matter of fact, if a permit operator goes in and begins operating on a permit, he's liable for 100% of the value of any standing timber that he leaves remaining on there. And the reason for that, of course, it's, we refer to that in the department as the high grading law. We don't want to sell a tract of timber and have somebody go in and cut out just what they want to take out and leave the poor quality stuff remaining there for us to deal with in some other means, and not of course then receive the revenues from that. So that's why we appraise the value of the entire sale, and we expect once it begins, the entire sale has to be operated on, or at least paid for in its entirety before the sale is closed.
Okay, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Tomlinson, one other question. In paragraph D, it provides for the release from a bond obligation. Against what is that to protect the state? What's the bond for?
The
Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, I'm not sure how long ago we changed this, but basically, of all of the outstanding timber that's been sold but not yet harvested, about 17% of it is fully secured, if you like, I think I'm using that term right, with some sort of financial instrument such as a bond. And most of that, almost all of that, is by larger forest products industries. The reason that that's in there was kind of a customer service thing, if you will, on our behalf, where we, the state, said to the industry folks who didn't, number one, they didn't want to tie up the 15% cash as a down payment. They could take that money back and use it somewhere else if they secured it 100%. But more, as importantly, I'll say, it also allows the industry folks then to go in and perhaps start doing some road work or other work, survey work or other things like that, that would, before they actually begin the harvest operation, and it provides them more flexibility, if you will, because they have the sale 100% guaranteed that they can go in and begin the process on it. So they're just, yeah, we're supportive, by the way, of that part, Section D, because we feel that basically you're allowing the industry folks to go back from, letting them off the hook, that 85%, that wasn't the intention of putting that in place in the first place.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tomlinson, so in effect you're releasing them from the bond, but you're retaining 15% of that in cash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Frank, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
So that, Mr. Chair, so that they'd be like all the rest of the
mm-hmm.
permit holders out there.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a series of questions, and I'm struggling with this a little bit. Could you tell me, when you're buying the futures at a future many, many years ahead or a period of time ahead before you actually harvest and then sell the product in the marketplace, How far out are you having to purchase this?
Maybe it would help just to give us the 101, the primer on how these contracts work. How, you know, logger wants to log a tract of state forests. cover to do that? How does that work exactly?
Do you want it from the state perspective or the
Let me show you the context of which I'm going with my questions, because I'm assuming that if you get caught, you buy high and sell low, or your purchase price goes down, that the opposite also can occur, that if you're purchasing ahead, that you can purchase low and then sell high. And I'm just curious to know if that's the case, and if what we're looking at here is a situation in which we're trying to create a guaranteed no-loss situation.
I can move on.
Mr. Dane.
Senator, Mr. Chair, I can take a shot at that, a stab at that there. County timber sales are usually two-year sales. State of Minnesota is a five-year sale. This is an extremely capital-intensive industry. The rule of thumb now is if you're going to go into logging, it's going to take $2 million to open up an operation. So they've got to have enough timber on the books to cash flow that operation. To kind of put it in perspective, the average time period that a state timber permit is before it's harvested is about 2.5 to 3 years, if I'm not mistaken. That's the numbers I've heard there. So although they are able to wait 5 years, they are buying out in front of themselves instead of a harvest plan. Now, your question regarding, okay, if you bought low and if it goes up high, what happens there? And that question was brought up in the House as well during boom times. What happens in that case? And I can give you an example, and it kind of ties into the issue of the $40 per cord and above, because I can talk about this. I'm not a logger or a mill. It usually takes $35 per cord for production to take the tree down and cut it in the length and put it on the landing. $15 per cord to bring it to the mill, rough numbers and stuff. So that's $50 a cord. So if you've got $40 cord wood here and you're getting paid and it costs you $50 a cord to deliver it, the mill has to pay you $90 a cord to cover your expenses. Mills are no longer paying $90 a cord for delivered wood. Now, when wood prices were going up, like you're saying, though, the logger was still locked into his $50 per cord of production and transportation costs. The only people that were really benefiting from this were the landowners, were the state of Minnesota. State of Minnesota timber revenues went from $23 million a couple years ago, or 26, roughly speaking, to $46 million. So the boom was on the timber landowner's end of it, not on the logger or even the mills as much as the landowner.
And Senator Saxon.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just going to because I think that that Senator Sharon brings up a fair question, and one thing I might add to what Mr. Dane said right away is that when they bought this high wood, that wasn't the only problem. Then the mill shut down, so there wasn't any place to sell it. In other words, if they had bought this wood for $100 a cord and the mills had continued in working and said, well, we're only going to pay $60, at least they'd get $60 out of this. But they just shut down, so there was no market either for the wood. I think you bring up a good point in that there's no question about it that the contractors were culpable. I mean, you know, they did. There was a little bit of speculation going on here, but I think our point, and I think it's well taken, is that we can't afford to lose this particular group of contractors, because it's the only way that we can really get the product out of the woods and into the mills, you know, that produces the job, that builds the houses, and that's why I think we aren't going to be returning this money. We're going to just be using the credit system, so that in fact we're in effect going to be forcing the contractors to use this credit to continue to harvest the wood and manage the wood on our forests.
Thank you for clarifying that, Senator. I have a question first, Mr. Tomlinson. How does the state? What's the mechanism by which the state sets its price?
We, Mr. Chair, members, the state has set the price typically based on transactional evidence from, I believe it's the previous 12 months. We will set a base price which then we give to our foresters out there. And when they have auctions, they have to receive bids that are at least the bid, the minimum price or up. And unfortunately, the wood that we're talking about here, a lot of this was bid up quite significantly above that base price. Now, the other thing I should mention is that since the since this this correction began, the industry 6 or 8 months ago, something like that, the state has adopted a policy of we've gone back to a base price established based on, I believe it's 2002 prices, transactional evidence during 2002, instead of using 2006 or whatever. So,
because the market was so out of whack.
That's correct.
All right. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question with regards to the amount of people we're talking about here. You said there was 150 loggers. Is that – can you go over that with me a little? How many people are we talking about here that are going to be out of work?
Senator, Mr. Chair, there are about 300 loggers in the state of Minnesota total. About 150 of them have state contracts that hold some of this high-priced stumpage here. And that's the group we're trying to target, providing some relief to right now.
Follow-up question. Mr. Chair, the 150 loggers, how many people work for those people? Or is that just 150? Is that the number we're talking about?
No. Mr. Senator, Mr. Chair, we estimate that there are about 1,200 to 1,300 people involved in the logging industry side of it up in northern Minnesota, based on those that participate in the Log Safe Labor and Industry Program. So in that 1,200 to 1,500 range of employees.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add one thing to just be clear about it, that our permits range up to 5 years, and not all of them are 5 years, although a lot of them are 5 years, and certainly that has contributed, some would suggest, I'll say, that has contributed to speculation by some folks that they can buy it at a higher amount now with the recognition that maybe 5 years from now they'll be able to harvest it and sell it profitably. We're talking about within the department as well, what do we need to do to avoid this kind of pickle in the future? And one of the things is perhaps that we should be backing off on the number of 5-year permits and looking more at 3-year permits or something along that line too.
That's the department or the commissioner's discretion.
That's correct.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I might ask Mr. Tomlinson, because I think this is an important point. When we got to the point early last fall, late last summer, when we saw this thing happening, we tried to think of reasons why it happened and what we could do to prevent it in the future. And you just mentioned one of them, but there was a number of things that we thought we could do, wasn't there?
Mr. Chair and Senator Saxog, there are a number of things that we've identified short term that we ought to be doing relative to, you know, right now to help give a little relief that we could do without legislation. And we've done several of those things, like I mentioned the 2002 transactional evidence versus the 2006 or 7 transactional evidence. So that's one thing. And I won't go into a lot of detail on it right now, but there's several things that we did put in place. And suffice it to say, we'll be continuing to explore what can we do within the existing laws that we have available to us. The less than 5-year permits is one thing. More sealed bid sales rather than just all oral auction was one of the things that some folks had suggested. And I got to forewarn you that nobody's in 100% agreement on any of these strategies. But
so the auction, Mr. Tomlinson, is everyone gathers in a room and waves their paddles or something?
That's
okay.
Correct.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Tomlinson, I had one other thought. That this is going to result in a loss of revenue to the state, I'm assuming, since you duly noted that it resulted in an increase a couple years ago or a few years ago. So what will be the effect of this on the forest management investment account?
Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, I'm really glad you asked that question because, of course, we're over here with a number of new ideas for funding out of that forest management investment account that depend upon the health of the account. We feel pretty strongly that the forest management investment account will support the activities that we're asking for to be funded, which is about $7 or $8 million more dollars in 08 than it is in 07 out of that account. And we feel we can do that for a couple of different reasons, that we're pretty safe with that. Number one is that most of the wood that's being harvested right now, and they are harvesting quite a bit of wood right now and delivering it out there, but a lot of that, most all of that, is wood that was sold back in 2002, 2003. Very little of it is probably higher-priced wood that was 04 and 05 wood. So, and the forecasting that we did relative to the fund statement for the Forest Management Investment Account, of course, took that into account. You're usually, the majority of the wood that's being harvested is going to be older wood, older permits, if you will, and not necessarily the more recent permits. And that's especially true now with the case that we have the more recent permits are higher valued permits than the older ones. So the other thing that we feel is that a lot of the investment initiatives that we've identified and brought before the Finance Committee here are not necessarily things that have to carry tails out beyond the 08 and 09 biennium. So we feel pretty confident that the economists are telling us that they've looked at the fund statement, how we've done our forecasting, that sort of thing, that the monies are going to be there to support the activities that we're looking for in the 08 and 09 biennium.
Okay.
And after that, we're not certain at this point. We'll have to kind of recalculate that again in a year and 2 years and see where we're at that point.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Tomlinson, so for this budget cycle, we should be okay with this account. But the out biennium might be a different scenario.
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, thanks a lot again for asking that. But we feel we've asked that question ourselves a dozen or more times, and we've had several different folks looking at our methodologies for the forecasting and otherwise, and everybody is telling us we're in pretty safe for 08 and 09. Beyond that, nobody is willing to bet anything.
Okay. Thank you.
Chairman, I have a couple more questions, if I may.
Yep, Senator Sharon.
Is the mill reopened then? If there's harvesting occurring, has there been a change in the mill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, right now Ainsworth, who has three plants in Cook, Grand Rapids, and Bemidji, are not open. They are taking some wood in anticipation of the fact they may open in late spring. And of course, if they don't take the wood in right now, then the road restrictions go on, and they can't get any wood in when they need it. So I think they're wanting to fill the lots. But in answer to your question, no, those three mills are not open.
Chairman Dibble.
Senator Sharon.
Yeah, continue. Does this, when you're talking about the 150 employees, are they employees of the mill that we're talking about, or are they employees of the logging industry that are now unemployed?
If I may.
Mr. Dane.
Chair, Senator. Actually, no, those 150 we referenced are 150 logging companies. Okay, and they have 3 to 5 to 10 employees. So that's where you come up with your 1,500 total employees impacted by this. But these are logging company employees, not mill employees. But as an example, to tie back into this, logging company employees after breakup in April can be laid off for a period of time because there's no logging activity going on there. Last year, because no logging activity went on in the summer as well, this problem has been compounding all year long. They exhausted all their employment. And then they were afraid of losing these, resources, these people, to other industries. So although, no, they're not unemployed at this moment, this is the harvest season, they could potentially be unemployed if the downturn continues on. And we want to do what we can to keep them in place.
Senator Sharon.
I think this will be my last question. I'm not sure. But
ask as many as you like.
The 150 logging companies, will they be made whole with this?
Mr. Dane.
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, they won't be made whole. This will provide relief from state sales that will potentially assist 75 to 90% of those loggers there in that group. However, they've got other wood out there, county sales and stuff like that, that are also, you know, faced with the same situation. But I'm glad you brought that up in the respect that the counties, for the most part, and I've been to all the counties and talked to them, are waiting to see what the state does. I said, okay, let's see what the state does, and we'll take our lead from the state. So I think the relief will be forthcoming from them as well to offset some of this crisis situation. Thank you.
Great. All right. Any further questions? Does the committee feel comfortable enough with the provisions? We didn't quite get through the entire walkthrough, but we've talked a lot about it. We understand what the bill calls for. All right. Senator Saxhog.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would like to move that Senate File 260 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
As amended. Senator Saxhog
as amended.
Moves
yes.
Senate File 260 as amended be recommended to pass and referred back to or up to the full committee in, what is the committee? Environment and Environment, Natural Resources. It's getting late for me here. Any questions on the motion? Anything further from the committee? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 91 is a bill that will require an economic impact statement to be submitted to a local unit of government when the DNR is going to remove land from timber harvesting. With me is Bob Meyer, ever faithful commissioner of the DNR, to briefly discuss the DNR, what the DNR does now and when removing the land from the timber harvesting and how this provision can be implemented without specific legislation.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, again, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Currently, we work and deal with these issues in our subsection forest management planning process, looking at lands that are able to be sustained for forest management, lands that we do set aside, and working with the stakeholders and actually the residents, counties, local units of government, so they know what these lands are and why we're proposing the harvesting of certain lands and why the harvesting of not others. We recently, today actually,
thanks,
gave Senator Saxhog a letter, which you're receiving right now, that outlines our willingness to continue this process and look at it in our subsection forest management planning to commit to work with the authors to develop an approach for conducting the economic analysis that they're looking for in this bill. Through our ongoing work and activities, we feel we can accomplish the goals of the bill and work with all local stakeholders, with all stakeholders, to get them the information they need. Recognizing that the need to discuss and be aware of the economic impacts and also the other impacts that forestry and foresting and harvesting areas and not harvesting areas provide. So with that, you can see in the letter that we understand the importance of these forest lands to local economies and providing this information to the counties that need that information.
So,
Senator Saxhog.
So, Mr. Chair, I think I'd like to thank Mr. Meyer and others at the DNR for taking a look at this issue, working towards implementing this in their planning process. And with that, I'd like to withdraw the bill.
All right. I did have one question for Mr. Meyer. Mr. Meyer, this is a great letter and good news. When the DNR does undertake to examine, you know, the full implications of withdrawing forests from potential harvest, you know, as the previous conversation on the previous bill suggested, you know, it's an important part of local economies, and it's important for us to be aware of that and sensitive. But there are other, you know, there are reasons sometimes that forests get taken out of consideration for harvesting. And so will you also be involving other kinds of interests, the environmental community, et cetera, in undertaking that examination? Great.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we do work with the whole group of stakeholders. For those of you who have seen our presentations, our policy and budget presentations, I discussed the three circles that we work in: recreation, conservation, and sustainable economic use. And we work with all of those stakeholders equally in making our decisions, not only on forestry, but other uses of our state's natural resources. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing up that point.
Thank you. Anything further from the committee on Senate File 91? Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one question about the letter that was distributed to us. And in the third paragraph, it says, DNR is in the process of hiring a forest economist. And I'm a little curious that you don't have a forest economist. I was under the impression that perhaps there were a few of the foresters in the Department of Natural Resources that were economists. And let me explain a little further where you're coming from. I have a degree from the University of Minnesota in agricultural economics, and several of my friends who graduated with me were in forestry, but in forest economics. So do you have a forest economist on staff now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferguson, we did. He retired. So many of you have had the pleasure of working with and meeting with Doug Ford. He did retire from the department last year. He was one of our chief forest economists. He was responsible for many of the changes we've done to our timber harvesting guidelines that are out there. So we're in the process of replacing that expertise, and Mr. Thomason can explain further.
Mr. Thomason.
Mr. Chair, members, in the meanwhile, we are relying on the expertise of Dr. Calder Hibbard, who works for the Forest Resources Council. So as I was just explaining earlier here, we've asked other folks to come in and kind of look at the forecasting methodology that, you know, talk with us about that stuff. And he's been filling in that role on a very, you know, basis. He's on loan to us as we need him to help with some of these things. But we are moving forward to try and fill that economist position that we have in the division.
Thank you.
Thank you for your.
Thank you. So Senate File 91 is withdrawn. Yes. Senator Sachshaug.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1118, a forestry bill brought to us by the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. And that bill, and with me tonight's Wayne Brandt, their chief executive, and he'd like to go over the bill and help answer any questions. So with that, you have 1118 in front of you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Sachshaug. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Brandt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Sachshaug. Wayne Brandt, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Timber Producers Association, Minnesota Forest Industries. I know you've had a lengthy discussion about industry conditions and economics, so I won't belabor that. This bill represents a number of different provisions designed to improve the economic condition of the forest products industry. A number of these came out of the task force that the governor had convened and brought forward, and this is an effort to put them in a comprehensive package to address a number of different issues. I guess I won't go through the bill section by section given the hour, but would be happy to respond to any questions that committee members may have.
Mr. Chair, but I would like to have Mr. Brandt just generally go through the some of these sections and just tell them kind of what they're about.
Great. That would be excellent. Mr. Brandt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Sachshaug. Section 1 deals with truck weights for hauling forest products. There was a change made 3 years ago that allowed an extra 10,000 pounds of weight for hauling pulpwood and saw logs from the woods to the mills. This would extend that provision to the specific finished products of the primary industry. It's intended to be narrow. You can see that there are a number of restrictions on the usage of this in the existing statute. The sixth axle has been definitively shown. The trucks with this configuration have been definitively shown to do less damage to roads than the 8,000-pound trucks at five axles. The sixth axle, by a recent, last year, MnDOT study, provides a significant increase in the excess braking capacity that's out there. And there's a restriction on not hauling on interstates or posted bridges or the other matters. The truck.
Excuse me, Wayne. The one thing I'd like to say about this is there's no question about it that if we pass this bill and the policy committee passes the bill, this will be going to transportation. And so they will cover that section.
Thank you. I recall that there was a lot of work. Has MnDOT had a chance to look at this? There's a lot of work. This is an excellent bill. I supported it last year. Wondering if MnDOT is aware of they indicated any initial position to adding the finished products.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The MnDOT over the years, you know, as Mr. Brandt says, we kind of started this with the woods, the trucks coming out of the woods and into the mills, and I think MnDOT saw that the sky didn't fall, and in fact thought, you know, this has some possibilities for farming and for other rural industries, and so I think that there's very little question that MnDOT supports this.
Mr. Chair, just one thing on that. The specific language was sent to MnDOT several months ago, so they're very well aware of it.
We'll have more discussion in transportation, no doubt. So I look forward to that.
Section 2, and Senator Sharon heard about this when I testified in the Senate Energy Committee, and I won't belabor this. The forest products industry self-generates 28% of the electricity that we use from renewable sources. 4% of that is hydro. 24% is biomass from our wood processing. As Hormel used to say, they use everything but the squeal on the hog. Well, we use everything, including the bark, when the trees come in, the plants. What this language would do is simply say that if you're already meeting the 25% mandate, and it doesn't affect the 25% mandate, that you could not be charged any incremental costs for an electricity generator seller to get up to the 25%. Section 3.
If we could pause for one moment, I assume that Senator Prettner-Solin and Senator Anderson will have some interest in that. I don't know that they'd be opposed, but I'm guessing that Xcel and Municipal Power and others would have a keen interest in that provision. So,
Mr. Chair, this particular section, I would be almost 100% sure would end up in the Energy Committee for a look after it gets out of Environment and Natural Resources. So,
Mr. Chairman, I can assure you that both Senator Solin and Senator Anderson are very well aware of this issue.
Thank you.
Section 3 deals with sales apportionment factors for the corporate franchise tax and the acceleration there, too. Our industry is kind of the classic example with heavy capital investments, high payrolls, and very significant out-of-state sales. This is a general provision that'll be in front of the tax committee. But we're kind of one of the poster industries for this provision and accelerating that change. Section 4 is sales tax and capital equipment. The forest products industry, paper industry in particular, is the most capital-intensive industry that's out there. Need to make ongoing, continued, highly significant capital investments. What this provision does is it would take the first step in converting the existing rebate on the sales tax on capital equipment to an upfront exemption. Moving on in the language, the language on page 6 just defines what the wood products industry is for the purposes of this act. Section 5 is also a tax provision which would extend the sales tax exemption under agricultural provisions for the tires on logging equipment. And for those of you that haven't seen the logging equipment, a set of tires for a skidder costs $20,000. So the sales tax on that is $1,300. And given the economic challenges that we face, it would be a significant benefit to loggers on an ongoing basis. The appropriations sections in Section 6 are a variety of things that have been in front of the Appropriations Committee, the Environment Appropriations Committee. There are just a couple of things that I would highlight. I guess one thing in particular that I'd highlight out of those provisions that has not, I believe, been in front of the Appropriations Committee, and that is on page 7, item E, $480,000 to the Interagency Information Cooperative to implement technical assistance, technology development, and transfer programs. This is particularly an effort to further refine some of the modeling and analytical tools, which are fairly well developed, and then provide that transferability to particularly counties and smaller, not industry doesn't need this, we already do this, but to the counties in particular on utilizing the most up-to-date analytical techniques prior to making their management decisions. The DNR has moved a long way. They've hired a forest modeler. My organization has employed a forest modeler since 1994, and there's just very powerful tools for assessing sustainability and how across the landscape we provide the different habitats and forest types for all of the resources objectives that are out there. So I would just highlight that one and be happy to respond to any questions.
And that's all in the governor's bill.
Yeah, all of these items, I guess the final thing I would add, except for the $480,000, are contained in the governor's budget proposal. The $480,000 is not, but it was a recommendation of the task force.
Questions from the committee to Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I was still reading through page 7, and there is a typo on page 7, line 28. It says filed foresters. I think that should be field foresters.
Yes.
I'm wondering if we need to have even field in it, if we just say foresters.
Well, did you catch that?
I think, Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, I'm assuming that whoever wanted this wanted to make sure that these were actual foresters out in the field and not in St. Paul.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd move on page 7, line 28, delete filed and insert field.
All right. Senator Frederickson's motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Questions from the committee? Well,
Mr. Chairman, I just have a comment. Senator Saxhog, this bill is going to keep you busy because you're going to full environment next, then transportation, then energy, then taxes, and then finance. You haven't missed many Senate committees with this bill. Well, but we had an amendment or two to take care of that.
We'll get you into health and human service.
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, I guess we're trying to, and we hope that we aren't going to miss deadlines doing this, but we're trying to bring some attention to this particular industry, and we think we have some very good solutions or possible solutions to some of these problems. And think it would be, for the most part, it may not come through this way entirely, but it would be a wonderful package, and we think it would help the industry.
All right.
But I agree with you.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Saxhog.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that Senate File 1118, as amended, be recommended to pass and be laid over for possible inclusion in Senate File 438.
All right.
Do you really want to do that? Send 438 to all those committees?
Okay. All right. So all in favor of laying over Senate File 1118 as amended, with a recommendation to pass for possible inclusion in Senate File 438. Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Passes. All right, Senator Saxhog.
And last but not least, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to move to take Senate File 438 off the table.
Senator Saxhog moves to take Senate File 438 from the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment. This amendment deletes the repeal of the repealer and establishes another 10-year sunset for the Sustainable Forest Resource Act that we discussed last week.
All right. The A1 is coming around. We'll wait until everyone has that. We won't jump ahead like we did last time.
Mr. Chair, just as a discussion, as it said, we were going to repeal the repealer, and I think we gleaned out of our discussion last week that though people certainly felt that the Sustainable Forest Resource Act was highly beneficial and it certainly done more than its share of work and good, that rather than just sunsetting, we felt that a sunset at some point would be in all our best interests, and 10 years is, I think, pretty generous.
Still kind of a curious way of going about establishing a sunset. But that's fine. I mean, don't we usually use different words or different mechanism to sunset an act or an agency or a commission?
Mr. Chairman, trying to remember the history. It was in 1995, but I know in the modern era anyways, we usually say that those statutes expire on that date rather than repealed, but that's the way this was done.
Okay, right? Okay, yeah. All right, so just to refresh the committee's memory and to let Senator Sharon know, it took me a while to get this one. So this section of statute was set to be repealed or expire this year, and there was some notion of reviving that. And in the previous bill, the way we did that was we repealed the repealer. That's lines 3.26 and 3.27, which repealed this repealer, which is effective June 30th, 2007. And rather than which would then allow that section of statute to exist in perpetuity, we thought we would just simply extend it another 10 years. So we're simply changing that 2007 to 2017. Does that make sense? All right. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. All right. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I'm going to ask Bob Meyer, DNR Commissioner, to come up and review Sections 5 and 6. You'll remember these. They had to do with Baubine. Everybody remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
I think it would be beneficial for the subcommittee to go over them and make sure they were clear on the two proposed changes. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I lost a coin flip with Mr. Tomlinson, so I'm here to try to explain this now. So, Section 5 of the bill deals with the written consent. Currently, to harvest boughs on private land, you're required to obtain written consent from the landowner, which will provide the location of the land, section, township, range, and it basically is your receipt of those boughs from harvesting them on private land. What we're trying to do is to reduce that from 100 pounds to 25 pounds to make sure that it falls into consent with what we're doing in the next section. Section 6 deals with the bough buyer's permits. And what we're doing is going from 100 pounds to 25 pounds. And just a little bit of history. Bough buyers, this is where all of our Christmas decorative materials come from, off of the balsam trees. I've handed out the actual information that's on our website about balsam bough harvesting, and also a guidance document that is an education piece that we try to ensure that people have. The goal of these two changes was to, first of all, the bulb buyer permit, when you purchase one, it's $25 or $10 if you take some education. You'll see the language we're striking out on lines 3.8. It's $10 if the buyer attends an approved annual workshop or other orientation session for balsam bough harvesters and buyers. What we want to do is make sure that that education is obtained by everyone who's buying and harvesting boughs. So the changes in Section 6 deal with that, reducing the amount from 100 pounds to 25 pounds and reducing the two-tier permit system to one that you'll see on line 3.29. The commissioner shall charge a fee for the permit that covers the commissioner's cost of issuing the permit. This is similar language that we've passed in the law in other forestry sections. Right now, the permit will not be over $25. In all practical purposes, it'll be a little bit less. We don't know exactly what that cost is, but it will not be an increase in the fee. And also, you will see that the permit holder will be required to complete a pre-sale conference with the state appraiser designated to supervise the cutting. I know the discussion last week centered on private lands versus public lands. On public lands, you need to obtain the balsam bough buyer's permit, as well as to purchase balsam boughs.
You have to say that 10 times really fast.
Yeah, no. I don't think I can even say it again. So right now, the way it is, let me just try to simplify, not talking about different sections. On private land, you need to obtain written consent from the landowner. And then the person you sell those boughs to has to have a balsam bough buyer's permit. BBBP, we'll call it. That's even harder, so we won't say that. But then, in addition, if you want to harvest boughs on state lands, you need to have the balsam bough buyer's permit as well. I would have brought in the form, but I was looking at it with Bob Tomlinson, and it's dated 1942, so it's about the last time we've talked about balsam bough buying and things like that, probably. So what we want to do is these people, in many cases, are out making these balsam, or the balsam trees are trimming, making sure they're a little bit more productive, managing them. We want to make sure that when they're doing that on state lands, it's done in the most appropriate manner so that they aren't causing any damage to the trees that are out there. So the clarification we're seeking is providing all of that education to individuals out there. I realize that the statutes probably could use a little bit more tweaking to make that a little bit more clear. Will be something we'll be looking at, possibly working on between now and final passage of this section of law.
Great. Senator Sharon.
I was going to try to say, let's see if I can, balsam bough buying permit?
Yes, right. good.
Wow.
Why does the person who's purchasing the boughs that have been harvested have to have a bough buying permit? There's the one that harvests, I understand, but when they sell it to someone who's going to sell it to the public, I'm assuming, why is that retailer, when I think of as a retailer, have to have a permit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, Mr. Tomlinson couldn't stay away.
He enjoyed this conversation last time so much.
Oh, really? Have you been through this? Am I asking an old question?
No, that's actually a new question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, that's a very good question. Bob Tomlinson, for the record, from DNR Forestry. The balsam bough permit, the balsam bough purchasing permit was put in place as kind of a self-regulatory thing by the balsam bough partnerships advocated for it. And the balsam bough partnership was essentially all the people harvesting boughs, people buying boughs, people manufacturing boughs into Christmas wreaths and those sorts of things like that. And they recognized that there was an awful lot of bough harvesting that was occurring that was being done perhaps not in a sustainable manner, but also that there was an awful lot of bough harvesting done that wasn't supposed to be being done, i.e. people pirating boughs off of private lands or public lands somewhere elsewhere and bringing it in. And as they discussed it, and I wasn't part of these discussions, but what I've been told is that as they discussed this, they felt that the best way to self-regulate
the industry, if you will, and bring a little bit more regulation to the industry was to have the bow permit purchasers be regulated via the permit process so that they're kind of under the gun to make sure that they're only buying bows from folks that have a track record of where it's coming, where those bows are harvested from and coming from, that sort of thing. So that's a long answer. Hopefully it answers your question.
Senator Sharon, does that answer
Senator
your question?
Senator DeBolle, if I were to say what you just said, the persons that are purchasing the bows from the person that have harvested the bows does that to make certain that they're purchasing from a person that harvests with best practices, protects the whole industry.
Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, that's correct, that the purchasers are expected to keep a record, if you will, of where the bows that they're purchasing came from, and also, I want to say they can't really ascertain whether or not they were harvested in an environmentally sustainable way or not. But provided that the folks have a permit themselves that they were, you know, is the idea. Kind of a voluntary approach to the education component of the thing. So.
Certainly when, there's not a lot we can do about harvesting off of private lands, but hopefully people will avail themselves off of, you know, of some of the educational material. But we do have the ability to get some of this information and material in front of their eyes. And now even more so because I that's the purpose of the pre-sale conference. So, they will be educated on proper bough harvesting techniques so we're not lopping the tops off trees and ruining trees all over the place. So, all right. I think we're clear. We had a lot of questions. I think they've been dealt with. Anything else from the committee? Senator Saxog.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move now that to Senate File 438 as amended and including Senate File 1118 as amended be recommended to pass and move on to the full Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
So I think Senator Saxog, if you could amend your motion and move that Senate File 1118 be offered as an amendment to Senate File 438.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would amend my motion to include that we will amend Senate File 1118 onto Senate File 438.
All right. So Senate File 1118, as amended, is offered as an amendment to Senate File 438. Any questions from the committee? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. And then Senator Saxog moves that Senate File 438, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the full Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee. Questions? How mad is Senator Anderson going to be at us? Well, I guess we'll deal with her in the Environment Policy Committee. All right.
I'll be there.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate you and the committee's attendance, and I don't think we'll probably be meeting again, but... this was a success. I think we did a good job on these particular bills, and thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Saxog. Any announcements? Anything further?
No other business, Mr. Chair. We should be done unless Senator Chaudhry refers any more bills to our committee, and we pulled this together in a very short amount of time. Thank you.
Okay. The committee is adjourned.
If you pass something like this, I'll